Welcome to the Two Regular Teachers podcast. My name is Rick Kayla Thompson.
My name's Adam Lavance. Thanks for joining us for episode 79. And, mate, it's been a while. I think back to last year, we don't often get the opportunity to do two podcasts in a row. So it's a bit special tonight to be back in the chair 2 weeks in a row. And
that was the norm, though, wasn't it, Adam?
It was the norm. I actually don't know how we used to do that, if I think back.
We might go back one day.
Maybe one day, but things change, times change. And talking about, you know, you're getting busy, we can't do it. The last couple of weeks, you and I have had our information nights. They're big nights, aren't they, mate?
They are. Well, it's just another piece of the puzzle, really, for teaching that sometimes people outside the profession don't know.
Yep.
There are pros and cons, aren't there? I think pros would be it's good to meet parents.
Absolutely.
And some of them use it as that first opportunity, don't they?
Yep.
Nice to be able to... I think at 5-6, too, it's nice to be able to give an overview of the program that you run. Particularly, you know, you and I both work in flexible learning spaces. So, you know, the curriculum's a little different in those spaces. So that's good.
Yeah, because it's a big step up. From 3-4 to that 5-6 area, it's a big step up in curriculum, it's a big step up in all the things that you do. There's so many more transition days and sport days and things that, particularly if it's a family who haven't had someone come through that area, it is a bit, not confronting, maybe a little bit overwhelming to look at all these things, and it's constantly notes going home and they're out of the school a lot, and it's a bit of a change. I'm with you, I really enjoy meeting the parents, that being in the room, they come over and say g'day and have a little bit of a chat and introduce themselves, and even catching up with parents of siblings that you've had before and hey, how are you going and things. I must admit I've always find the presentation aspect interesting. I know for us we always do a PowerPoint presentation or something where we go over some of those main things, and I always wonder, you know, we also give out a newsletter with all that on there. Is it necessary? Do the parents actually want to sit through something like that? It's always a bit of a catch-22.
Well, sometimes you also, from our point of view, feel like maybe you've given a lot of that information out, like places via the newsletter and other, and whether it's online, and you wonder how many times can you offer it? But you know, wait until, because sometimes you think, look, didn't you just read that newsletter? But that's okay. And I guess, I mean, look, the other con is it's more sort of over time. That's not paid, but it's nice. Personally, I found it nice to be able to almost brag about the program you run. These are the many things that we're trying to put in place to help your kids have a better educational experience.
Exactly right. And coming back to the time and all the things, the time management aspect, you know, my team are looking at what we've got for the rest of the term. We've got 7 days out of the classroom before the end of term. I mean, that's what's going on. To be able to talk to the parents and trying to get that program going, and the importance of, you know, if we send things home and there's homework and things that it gets done, you know, it's such a big chunk of their learning to do. So, you know, we talk about term one being a very busy term. Well, there is. We've got 2 transition days, 2 sport days. Another teacher and I are out for a leadership program for 2 days, and you got Labor Day. You know, all these things that crop up, it just goes so quick.
It does go so quick, and sometimes, you know, you forget that still the most important thing after all this time is that relationship you build with the students.
It is.
And there's, like you said, there's so much in term one. Just before we get into our first topic, Adam, it's nice have a few more people liking our Facebook page this week. So we assume we've got some more listeners that we haven't heard from before, so that was nice to see.
Fantastic, yeah, really, really good. And that's what we want to connect with educators or even families and friends of educators as well, to get a real grasp of, you know, what teaching is about, because we really try and promote this as we are two regular teachers. We are far from perfect teachers, and we really want to get down to the nitty gritty of what being a teacher is all about and get that across to our listeners.
We're also far from the experts, so we always say, please, if there's something that you think we've got wrong or something you want to add, there's so many ways you can contact us. So those people who have, you know, recently joined us, you can just shoot us a line on a Facebook comment. But if you want to be more private and not have your views so public, you can go to the blog. There's also tworegularteachers@gmail.com. So there's so many ways you can find us.
Absolutely.
We'd love to hear from our listeners, always.
We would. So before we get into it tonight, mate, we've got some 3 ripping topics. I would like to congratulate the Melbourne Football Club on being AFLX Premiers. I'm not even going to go into that for foreign listeners and things like that, but I just think it's it needs to be said and a precursor to the year ahead for the Mighty D's.
Normally I wouldn't let that slide, but you have been a long-suffering fan, so I'll give you that, and apologies to our non-sport listeners.
Because I didn't think it was important until we won it, and it's probably the most important thing on the calendar at the moment. So,
dear me.
Well done, the D's.
Adam, for our first topic tonight, it's an interesting one, and it's one that will apply directly to our Victorian listeners who are teachers. I'm interested to know whether anything's come into the agreements in other states. So if you're listening from interstate, please let us know. But the topic tonight is the new program that's coming this year, I guess for want of a better term, Professional Practice Days. So just to give a bit of background, the Australian Education Union ran a survey Now, I think it was Victorian teachers, wasn't it, Adam?
I think it was, yeah, yeah.
And it was a workload survey. A lot of members have been saying for a long time that workload is increasing, and it's taking away time to do the core of the job, teaching and learning, assessment, planning for teaching. And so the results, I think it was the biggest survey undertaken. Now, I don't know if it was it by a union maybe in the state, or the biggest actual just workplace survey ever undertaken.
I think it was just a big workplace survey. I think maybe
because there were thousands who responded. I know I did. And I'm assuming you did as well. Yep. And I think it came out that on average Victorian teachers were working 54 hours a week, I think, which is 15 over what we're paid.
Yeah, we're paid for 38.
Yeah, so
38. So well 16 over. Hours, yeah, well over.
Principal's doing, I think, at least 60.
Yeah, something at the very hours. Least, you'd think.
And lots of other areas as well. So it talked a lot about the specific extra hours, and it also talked about the major concerns about what's being missed out on. Mm. So a lot of that stuff's being done with admin, all that extra time, you know, the paperwork. Mm. And dealing with lots of other issues outside of our paid hours. So they've introduced, for our listeners who aren't sure about this program, 4 professional practice days per teacher per year.
Mm.
So you have to take one each term, don't you?
Yes.
You can't hold on to them and stockpile them.
Yeah, take a week off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think the idea behind them is to give, I guess, some power back to the teachers and some time back to the teachers to do work that is directly linked to their teaching and learning.
Because that survey says what I think what all teachers would be saying in their teams and sitting around the staff room table is there's never enough time. There's constantly things cropping up. There's never enough time. And I think that the basis of it too was that we were, A, losing a lot of teachers, particularly some of the new ones, but also that we were having a lot of teachers who were depressed, finding things difficult, taking stress leave and doing all these things because the workload was too much. And
we know that there's that high level of young teachers or grad teachers who are dropping out 4 or 5
Absolutely.
Years.
Absolutely. And I've been looking at, you know, I look at grad teachers in our school and stuff, and it's a tough gig, particularly in the first half of the year where they're still learning just to be a teacher. They've still got to do everything else that's involved. It's tough.
Yep.
So these professional practice days are there to just, I guess, lighten the load a little bit. You can't take everything away. That's just not going to happen.
Mm.
They're not going to come in and go, look, now you're going to be paid for 50 hours work, or everyone has to go home at 4 o'clock every day. And that's just not going to happen. So this is kind of like a little happy medium in between to meet us halfway to give us that day each term to do that stuff. And I guess what we want to talk about now with that research behind them is looking at the effectiveness of them and the positives or negatives with them as well.
Well, we don't know yet, do we, Adam? Because even you and I, talking personally, haven't had ours yet.
But I've actually just started to jump in. I've got mine Friday.
Yeah,
it's coming up.
I've got mine next week. Yes. So schools are looking at it in different ways, and we've only spoken to a very small handful of schools. Obviously, there's some guidelines behind it that probably schools need to put in place, Adam.
Yes.
For example, I guess the simple one, which I assume most schools are doing, is that you're on campus, so to speak. Like, it's not a day that where you say, well, I'm going to stay home today and do the work. Normally, it's I know for us, and I think this is the same, but you can negotiate the day with your leader.
Yep.
And basically, they have to honour that day. Mm. And you also kind of discuss what it is that you want to cover. But you get the choice as long as it does link back. Now, I've seen some of the small print data that's come from the department. And it's around that whatever you choose to do, it still needs to link to the school's AOIP.
Yes.
And yep. Which I think is fair.
I think it's fair. Yep.
And so I guess there is a discussion that you have to have with your leader. It can be taken in teams, Adam. So your entire team could go out for the day.
Yep.
But you don't have to do that. And I think that's key because I know that all of our teams are taking this term's day together.
Yes.
But in the future, during the year, I mean, I know personally I'd like to have that freedom to make a choice and say, look, I really want to do this, maybe this professional development. Mm. I want to go and learn about dyslexia. I've got 3 dyslexic kids. I want to go and do a day where I can dig deep.
And that's something that you'll bring back as well. I know that
a lot
of leaders will say, if you're going to go and do that on your own, you can't just go and do that and keep it for yourself. It's something you got to bring back. I think you brought it up before as well. I think the sticking point for a lot of people is the idea that if there is a disagreement between leadership and yourself about what you want to do, it's been said that you can still choose what it is you want to do, but your leadership gets to dictate the day that you go. So they say, no, I don't like it. You actually have a little bit of power there to say, no, actually, dyslexia, for example, I really want to do this. It's something I'm passionate about. It's something I need in my classroom. I'm going to do it. Then they go, well, they have to let you do it. But then I say, but you're taking it on this date. So there is a little bit of wiggle room for teachers. It's not just what I was worried about was we were going to get this day and have leadership go, this is what it's for and this is when it
Absolutely,
is.
Absolutely, yeah.
And we get no say. And that kind
but of... But the guidelines, I think, say, and we should have brought the paper with us from the union, from the agreement, that can't happen.
That can't happen. And I think that's a good thing because I think that would actually demoralise teachers more to go, I've got this day. Oh, no, hold on. I'm being told what I've got to do. when I've got to do it. And particularly it's the what you've got to do. You're going to get more out of it if you're passionate about it or it's linked to things that you want to do. If they just go, no, you're doing this, it's actually a horrible way of doing it. It actually will make things worse. And the benefit of the professional practice days is to lighten the load and to allow you to do some other things that simply you don't get time to do.
And I think most people, you would take that in good spirit, Adam, you know, and,
yes, for sure.
And do the right thing. And that brings me to something that I know some schools have discussed, is that if teachers are allowed to take it for absolutely anything, so let's say using it for maybe a report writing day. Now, this is an interesting one because I think there'll be some people who have different opinions on this. If I use it for a report writing day, does that relate to my practice enough? Because I know that some schools are suggesting, well, perhaps don't use it for that, because these are jobs that were getting done before these days came along. And also, I think there's that worry that if we don't use these days in a valuable way and see bang for our buck, that the government will take it away, that money will go, because the government are putting thousands into this to help schools pay for relief teachers.
Yeah.
So I think there is an argument to say, and I kind of agree with that, I think that there is a line where you need to justify why you're using it, otherwise the money will go.
I do too. There is a small part of me on the flip side of that the professional practice days were implemented to lighten the load for teachers. If you took a day in term two to get your reports done or have them 90% done, what would that do for teachers? It would lighten the load. It would actually do that. I actually agree with you that I would actually never take mine for a report right now because I wouldn't feel like I was doing enough. But at the same time, there are people who would go, look, if I could take mine then and knock my reports out of the way, then I actually have more time, I'm less stressed to do some of these other things that I want to do without it sitting on my shoulders.
That's the thing. When you explain it like that, like if you could justify that if I used it to catch up, then I've got more time to devote to areas of teaching and learning rather than, you know, if we use your example specifically, rather than doing some makeshift independent lessons just to keep them busy while you're trying to get some of the other work done. So I think your argument is sound in a way. Yeah. So we'd love to hear from our listeners, what do you think about these professional practice days, whether you're a Victorian teacher or not? How valuable do you think they'll be, and will they be worth it? Do you think they'll stay with us over the coming years?
Well, what I'd love to know from listeners as well is, obviously our Victorian ones will be doing one this term. If you've already done it or you are doing it, what are you doing? Like, what have leadership given you a little bit of freedom to sort of choose and negotiate the data, or have they actually come down and gone, no, we really want everyone doing this, and it's been a bit of a back and forth, it's been a little bit of tension in the air? We'd really like to know, because this is the first time it's been happening, and anything can happen, I suppose. So yeah, if you've got anything you want to add to that, drop us a line on Facebook. So Rick, for our second topic tonight, we want to talk about something that's been in the news. Obviously, a lot of people would have seen, if you watch the news, read the papers, that school shootings have been back on the forefront of the papers. Obviously, a lot happening in America at the moment around that. We don't go very political, and we certainly won't be doing that with this tonight. We're not going to talk about the political side of the guns and things like that. What it did bring up for me, though, and I came across this article, is that it was an article written by Glennon Doyle Melton, and it's about one teacher's brilliant strategy to stop future school shootings. And it's not about guns. Now, instantly that says we're talking about the school shootings. We're not. The article talks about ways of getting to those students who fly under the radar or seep through the cracks. A lot of the discussion in America at the moment has been around this. This person who did it was very lonely, didn't have any friends, hated school and all these things, and it sort of snowballed. There's so many more reasons, obviously, that go towards, but that was the discussion. And Glennon Doyle Melton talks about a teacher of the student in her class. Now, we had a bit of a laugh off air that this lady's gone into the classroom and had the teacher teach her how to do long division, staying behind for an hour teaching her long division. What teacher's got time to do that? We had a little bit of a giggle about that. But it came to talking about what this teacher actually does to get through to some of these students. And it was quite interesting, wasn't it, Rick?
Well, it was. It was in the Reader's Digest. And I think Glennon Doyle Melton was a parent.
Was the parent of the student who was in the class.
Yep. And he said that his child came home, had to do long division, which is interesting. They're still doing long division in American schools. came home and this parent, Glennon, was unable to help him.
Yep.
Not because they were doing long division in a different way. I think he admits that he'd never learnt long division properly. Is that right?
That's right.
And so he went in to see the teacher to ask for a bit of help, and the teacher gave him a tute session after school, didn't he?
Yep.
Or she. I wasn't sure if it was a male or a female. And he said that they gave up an hour of their time to go through long division. He got his own tute session. But then it led into him finding out about how this teacher tries to get to those kids and find out about the kids that are lonely. And that was probably the most fascinating bit of the article.
And basically what it said was every Friday afternoon, she asked her students to take out a piece of paper and write down the names of four children with whom they'd like to sit with the following week. And the children know that these requests may or may not happen. I mean, you can't sit next to all four kids. So then she asked the students to nominate one student who they believe has been an exceptional classroom citizen for that week. Then everything's submitted to her privately. She sits down and then studies them on a Friday night and looks at the students who aren't getting requested by anyone. So she looks at all the names and say, is there a few people in class who no one's requesting to sit next to? Who can't think of anyone to request? So these students who are looking around going, I don't really have a friend to sort of ask to do. Someone who never gets noticed, even though never gets noticed enough to be nominated. So they're a great kid, they do other things, but no one nominates them for their good work. And who had a million friends last week, but now has none this week. So last week on the ballot, so you know, eight kids might have asked to sit next to them. This week they've got one. So basically what it's talking about is it's her method to get through to students who go through the cracks, those quiet students. Because let's be honest, we think about our classrooms, often we really try to challenge the high kids. Mm-hmm. We provide a lot of things for those low kids, and it's those quiet middle achievers who are very good at just being quiet and doing the work and slipping under the radar, and that it's harder to get to sometimes. And what jumped out to me was, it's brought it up for me that there are a lot of students out there today, both primary school and high schools, who are in this situation of being a bit lonely and finding it hard to make friends and things. Obviously nowhere near the size of a school shooting, of course, but it really got me to thinking about the strategies that we use as teachers and the opportunities we have to really connect with these students and build them up as people and make them better citizens of our world.
Well, it's about relationships, and this particular teacher in the article, that strategy that you described is all about building better relationships. And I think, you know, you mentioned having the kids who are struggling with some skills and kids who are extending, which is really important for the academic side. But it's about building the relationship. I mean, good luck to this teacher, because any act of kindness like that to try and build your relationships with the kids is worthy. Mm. I mean, we know that, like, a student or a child or a person, no matter what age, who's committed such a horrendous crime as some of those shootings that we've heard about in America, we know that there has to be so much more going on. And how do you... The only thing that... If I'm going to play devil's advocate for this article, I would say, again, you know, why... And this is a great story, really, about a teacher trying to do the right thing. Mm. But, again, how can we have full responsibility to... And I'm doing it in inverted commas, save these kids, because some of them are coming from such severe disadvantaged backgrounds.
You're absolutely right.
That the wheels are already in motion. Mm. But you're right, there might just be that one little thing that clicks with a teacher, but it seems so far gone, doesn't it, with some of these particular people who are who this is happening to.
Yeah.
It's interesting you mentioned about getting kids to write four names and doing that citizenship thing, so she could try and find, because I think with you and I in our job, normally you might find some interesting things out around the time when you ask the kids to anonymously nominate who they'd like to be in a cabin with when you go to camp.
Yep.
But normally by the time you go to camp, unless it's right at the beginning of the year, we know that. And I remember, well, every year I've ever done that, some of the kids that you notice don't get nominated, you know, your heart goes out to them. But you could have almost, if you know your kids well, you could have almost predicted it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So a good teacher would already have earmarked that particular child, knowing that, okay, they struggle with friendships. Mm. What am I doing already to help that?
Yeah.
And then we also know that when no one's chosen them, you know that we go, and they're the kids that I work hard at, you know, you're shuffling names all around the place going, right, who can I put this person with who, even though they weren't nominated, I know that particular other student will be kind to them and will be all right with them.
Yes,
you know? And so we're doing that.
Some of those students who aren't picked to be in a cabin as well are the ones who muck up all the time and really cause problems today. And you'd really love sometimes to have that opportunity to pull them aside and go, you can't because you'd shatter them, but you want to say, look, no one nominated you to be in a cabin with them. Why do you think that is? Do you need to have a real reflection on your behaviour that you're picking on kids? And
but you couldn't, could you? That would break their hearts.
Absolutely it would, but it's an opportunity for them, because you want students to be reflective. You want them to reflect on their behaviour and then reflect on their learning. There's no better way. I mean, you couldn't really do that. But look, it's very interesting stuff, Rick, the relationship side of things. And I know you and I do our different things. I know for me, to build relationships, I love giving kids nicknames. You know, I'll always find a bit of a funny nickname and that sort of stuff. You know, I had one girl many years ago.
Are they happy with it, Adam? Do you always make sure?
Absolutely. Because you sort of, you know, the kids. But I had a girl who, grade six girl, who was a gun catch. Like, if you're playing rounders, she just So Buckets, her nickname became Buckets, and she loved it. And she just, it just gave her, every time you said it, you could see the smile on the face and things like that. So I love doing that sort of thing to build that connection with them, that you got a nickname, you're going all right.
Why was she Buckets, Adam?
She was Buckets because she could Buckets, like Stewie Lowe. Yeah, Buckets used to be able to catch everything. Got bucket hands, so it just, you know.
To all our listeners, Stewie Lowe was a footballer with big hands.
but she just catch everything in distance. Or I've had a girl called Tiana, and my daughter can't say Tiana. She says Tianana. So I've just started calling the student Tianana. I think, and the mum will come up and say, "Oh, she came home. She loved it. Mr. Lazar's daughter can't say my name, and so he started calling me." So that's great. It's those sorts of things that you find a way to build those relationships in your classroom.
Yeah, and I think you're almost, this is something you can't be taught. Just to finish off, you can't be taught at university how to. It's little nuances, you know, like that worked for a couple of those students, but a nickname might not work for everybody else. Mm. So it's the way that you work out what's going to work for that particular child. So we're not saying that's going to solve any of these horrendous crimes that happen, but it's nice that there's good teachers out there and good people who are going to do that.
Things ever said in the staff room. Hi, everyone. Really sorry to interrupt. Just coming from yard duty, just had one of the boys come over to me to let me know that the boys' toilet, someone's put a couple of apples down there and clogged it up. Anyone want to volunteer to give up a bit of time from their recess just to clean that out for us, please?
Yep, me, Adam. Yep, I'll do it. Love to. Things ever said in the staff room.
Third topic tonight, Adam, relates to the information nights that we discussed in the intro, and it's about the spread of abilities in a classroom. At one point during our information night the other night, we were discussing differentiation and using the zone of proximal development for some of our assessments, just trying to give the parents a bit of a picture of how we orchestrate a lesson and to try and pinpoint the kids at their point of need. And it got me thinking afterwards, because one of my colleagues made a really, really great explicit explanation of what it's like for us. You know, that if you're teaching a maths lesson, and let's say you're focusing on 5-6 digit numbers and their place value, that we have, by year 5, year 6, you've got about a 6 to 7 year spread between the kids in your room, haven't you?
Yep.
From their abilities. And they all fit somewhere along that 6 to 7 year spectrum. And I just thought, as a topic, it'd be interesting, because differentiation is a word that probably even doesn't get used so much, but it's still, you know, there's lots of other words to use it. You know, the zone of proximal development is probably one of them. But, you know, how does a teacher, and I'm not just talking about primary, you know, I'm thinking about high school. I mean, it doesn't matter what subject you're teaching, you would have that spread. How does a teacher cater for the varying abilities in a classroom, particularly in the higher year levels? So I know that, I mean, I'll speak about today. I was teaching factors today and factor trees, but then I linked it to prime and composite numbers, obviously, and I won't go into how they apply to a factor tree. That should be obvious for those people that know. And then also I had some kids that knew all that who were working on a challenge with square numbers, so something that that I knew would engage them. So I had kids. And I said to the kids today, and I don't always do this, I said to the kids that I sort of explained briefly all the tasks, and then I asked them to choose what they thought they needed out of all those tasks today. So, you know, if you're iffy on factor trees, but you got a little bit, I think you should do that first, you know. If you're prime, what have you. So that's one way, you know, trying to give it back to the kids as well. You know, you need to take control of your learning here. But I thought, you know, in that one lesson, Adam, we work out our groups. You might see these kids today, those kids tomorrow. It's still difficult to get around and have quality time, because that's the most important time, not correction after school. That moment that you have one-on-one, that's the most important time where they learn. It is hard.
And I don't think...
After 13 years, it's hard.
It's still hard. It's getting harder. I feel like it's getting harder. To the point where I don't think there'll ever be a perfect answer. I think people always talk, you can do this, you can do that. But the hours you've got in a day, and I think we spoke about it off air, about you've really got 50 minutes in a lesson sometimes. And, you know, you can do a mini lesson. I know for me, talking about maths, you know, I love giving them quick questions to begin a maths lesson. It might go for 10 minutes, maybe 15. I'll put a variety up. And what I'll do, you know, we're doing fractions. So fractions is just one thing I've been putting up because they've been asking for it. So I do, you know, 1 over 2 plus 1 over 8 equals. Mm. So the kids can start on that one. Then there'll be a challenge one underneath of 1 over 5 plus 1 over 7. You know, so the kids who are really good can do that one and go on and challenge themselves and go further with a different type. Mm. And those other ones can stay there and do that one and we talk it through and things like that. But it's still hard to hit all the levels. You know, coming from 1-2, I think we probably had a spread of maybe 3. You know, you might have some kids working at grade 3, 2, 1 prep. Whereas 5-6s, you've still got some kids, there are the potential to be back at 1-2 level, going right through to year 7, even pushing into year 8.
Oh, definitely.
And sitting down and coming up, not only with catering for them, but finding the time to actually do it. Mm. So outside of your actually own planning, you have to come up with lots of different groups for all these different things. It's not an easy thing to do. I know for us, we're using our professional practice day this year to look at intervention. Mm. An intervention of those ones who require it at the lower level and those who require it at a challenging level. Mm. And setting all that up and how it's going to look and actually getting our support staff to take those small groups and we planned it and help out and doing those things to try and get to them more to do some of those things that unfortunately a lot of teachers say that you just don't get time sometimes to get to.
If you have the luxury of I guess it's a luxury, but if you do have the luxury of having a classroom where I guess you have minimal interruptions, so I'm talking about you're not having meltdowns and like you work, which you and I both work in an environment, we're kind of lucky in that degree, we've got lots of other challenges, but we might not have too many interruptions. I think there is a big a big push, and it's a worthy push, for learner agency. And that's giving back to the kids. Because you're giving, as a teacher, you and I've said this to the kids, we're giving 100% in the introduction of that lesson. We're giving them everything we've got.
Mm.
So they should give us that too. Because they're helping themselves there. And then by taking a bit more control back of how they want to go about learning that particular concept, and encouraging them if they want to go off on a tangent, letting that go, and us letting go of our plan a little bit, I think that is really powerful as well. Mm. If you've got that, those kinds of students with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think also to finish off on this one, I think everyone would agree that the toughest part of that intervention and that catering for the differences sometimes is those higher students, particularly in 5-6. I think back to reading and goal setting and reading and a student and those higher students coming over to read to you and they sit there with a novel and they read it superbly. And sometimes if you're going, you scratch your head, how am I going to challenge this kid? Their reading's beautiful. I can say, right, so tell me what's happened so far and I can give you lots of detail. It's finding some really challenging things to do with these students that really hits the mark to take them further. Because those students who are behind or below, theirs are a bit more prominent. You can see it, right? There's fluency there or there's punctuation here or whatever it is. It's not as evident at the top level. So actually doing some professional development and learning about that to take those kids further is key, because it's easy to sort of, they're fine, I need to spend time with them, I've got to spend time with these guys, when in actual fact those kids would be craving going a little bit further. So there's all that involved too.
So we'd love to hear from all our listeners, we'd love to hear from secondary teachers about how you deal with the spread as they go through the secondary year levels, and any primary teachers, what's one of the big successes you've had?
Righto, well, it's that time, anecdote time. I'm ready to pass the parcel. Unlike last week, I don't think there'll be any surprises in this parcel, but I'm passing over to Rick, mate. Take it away.
Oh, it's about time. I feel like I haven't done one in ages. Well, Adam, just some discussions were happening at school the other week about clothing.
Right.
And I'm not talking about what kids wear. I'm talking about what staff wear, Adam. And it took me back, and I'm going to take it a step further. Not just choices of clothing, Adam, but what happens to the clothing, particularly when we go down the road of wardrobe malfunctions.
Right.
Now, okay. I'm going to take you back to, I think it was around 2008, 2009. Not sure if you know the story, but I was asked to go up to, and there's another story that goes along with this, but I'll just give the brief version. I was asked to go up to the Department of Education in Melbourne one day with a small group of teachers from around the state. And we'd been asked to go up there. We thought it was to do a kind of a PD day around blogging. Because they were going to close down the Global Student Blogging Platform, the one that is now Global 2 that we use for the podcast.
Yes. Yep.
And there was a big kickback from a lot of people who use it. And I was one of them. And we were asked to go up and brainstorm about how, this could be fixed, and why it should be saved.
Yep.
What I learned later was that we were asked to go up really just to shut us up. Because we were
really
because we were sending petitions around, and it was all going to head. We were sending it to the government about this is great, kids are doing great stuff on this. So we were kind of sent up there to quell us. But so that's a whole other story, which I'll go into.
We need to talk about that one day.
It's a long time ago. Anyway, so I felt really important that day, and I believe John Pierce was there. So John, if you're listening, you might be able to. I think we went up together in the car, because John was heavily into the blogging at the time. Anyway, we were in a small room at the department at a big long table. We're sitting there, fleshing out lots of ideas, sharing. I was getting passionate, and we had lunch. Upon the lunch break, I went into the men's room.
Yeah.
And I had to do a number one, so that's why I'll just leave it there. And I went to zip up, and zip broke.
No,
broke off.
Oh, no.
Fairly come off. Couldn't do it. Now it was winter. It was around winter, so I had long pants on, and Thankfully for me, Adam, well, I thought thankfully, I was still panicked. I had a shirt on, but I had like a kind of like what I guess people would call a jumper or a sweater. I went back out. I remember just furiously, like, you know, like trying to get the zipper to work at first because it didn't come off straight away. It was like up and down, down, and then it just ripped off because I was panicking, you know.
No.
So I walked out and did the old pull down, you know, pull the old jumper as far down over this sort of pelvic area as
I could. So everyone knows exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, and I mean, thank God that that day was all just sitting around a table because I was like, I'm gone here. I'm at the department. I'm with some important people who seem like they know what they're talking about, and my fly doesn't work, you know. So
what time of the day did that happen?
Oh, we're talking normal lunchtime, so around 1 p.m.
1 p.m. Okay, so wasn't...
so I was there for another 3 hours or so. Man. Yeah, and I kind of kept making sure that, like, as I was, you know, when I was going to speak, that I wasn't sitting up too high, that it could be kind of seen that the jumper was still down. And thankfully, no one really found out. I think I don't know if John, if you are listening, did I tell you about that on the way home? I don't remember. But anyway, Adam, I was wondering, have you ever had, because you know, students comment on your clothing. Like, if you buy a new pair of shoes, kids always say you've got new shoes.
Yep.
You have a haircut. They notice a haircut. But have you ever had a wardrobe malfunction, Adam, where you've thought, I don't think I need to go home here?
It's actually happened twice. The one I'll tell you quickly was at school during planning time. I was over at the photocopier, and this is in the BER building. There's other classes, and they were 1-2 class at the time. This is going right back about 2012, I reckon. And the kids are in there doing some sort of dance in this classroom, and I just popped my head in. I knew the teacher well and stuff, and I was like, hey, and I had my jeans on. And there was this bit where you had to sort of squat down and up and squat down up, so I did it with them.
Oh, I reckon I know this.
Yeah, I've said this one before, and ripped the middle of my jeans, and I sort of got up and went, well, have fun, kids. And off I went over to the office and said to my principal, look, I've split my pants.
Oh.
I've got 40 minutes left of my plan, so I'm going to snip home. I was around the corner at the time to fix them. So, of course you can, off you go, and I went and put them. The other one I don't think I've told was possibly last year or the year prior, was I was at Landy Field for the Ats Day. Now, Landy Field, for those who don't know, is a big ass place.
Track and field.
It was at the end of the day, and we'd finished up, and I had just had shorts and a polo on, as you do, and a hat and things. And got to the end of the day, and all the kids were going home. And there's, you know, the fence where the seats are. I didn't want to walk around because it's actually a decent distance to walk down to where you got to get in. So I thought, I'll just jump this fence here. And as I've jumped the fence and sort of put the leg out, I've ripped my shorts up the middle. Now this is at Landy Field,
and I've
come down, and I've realised what I've done. And there's parents everywhere. So I'm standing there. There's parents coming out going, oh, Mr. Lavas, just taking such a time. I'm going, yeah, no worries, no worries. And I've kind of got there. I'm trying to play it. And a few parents noticed because it actually went towards the back of the shorts as well. And thankfully, you know, by this time I've been at my school a long time, and a few had a bit of a giggle. But thankfully it was the end of the day. Had I jumped the fence at 9:05...
I don't know why you were jumping the fence.
I don't know what I would have done. I was jumping the fence because I'm lazy. I didn't want to go around to the gate because the gate was a fair walk. I'll just jump here and get into it and that sort of stuff. And I fairly ripped them. Thankfully, it was at the end of the day, and I went home, and they went straight in the bin.
So two pairs of pants you've ripped over your career. Amazing. All right. So if you've got any wardrobe malfunctions, and obviously keep them clean, please. But sometimes, you know, you might have even seen a colleague who just chose to wear the wrong item when they were teaching some of the older kids, whether that be older girls or older boys, because you've got to be careful, Adam.
You do have to be very careful. But anything can happen.
We'd love to hear from you.
So, Rick, that brings an end to episode 79. And as we said off the top, it's really good to get two in a row done. We are going to have a small hiatus for the next few weeks as things ramp up. As we said before, it's harder to do them week by week. You know, back in the day, we sort of had the time. We don't have that as much. You and I both leading various things in the school, and things crop up. So it's good to do two in a row, but we will have a small hiatus for the next few weeks.
Yes, and there's lots of things going on, Adam. And it's a relatively short term. So we hope to be back. We expect to be back for the last couple of weeks of term. For Victorian teachers, it'll be about week 8 and week 9. We hope to churn out, hopefully, two episodes in a row again. Meanwhile, if you're a new listener, there are so many episodes that we've done over first terms before. Mm. Lots of issues we've discussed in the past about what happens in term one. So please go back through our back catalogue and choose one, you know, from February or March, and please have a listen.
Yeah, excellent. And to finish off there too, share the Facebook page particularly. The more people we can reach, the more you know, discussions we can have, and the more you know, we can get some input, and people can provide the anecdotes for us and things like that. So for me, Adam Lavas.
Me, Rick Kayla Thompson, and we've both been two regular teachers.